Hey there guys, Rohin here. I just wanted to stop by really quick before the show to let everyone know that today's episode is entirely about our Nuzlocke specific clauses that we're going to be using, as well as the rules of the challenge that we're going to be having between the three of us. We do hope that you enjoy it, but we also recognize that it might be a little bit dry compared to what we're usually going to be producing. So if you're not really into the specifics that we have, or you're just really not concerned about it, that's totally okay. You can jump ahead to episode 3. We won't think bad of you at all. But either way, thank you for listening, and thank you for your continued support, and I hope that you enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Blast Burn Radio. I am your host, Jolly by Nature, and with me, as always, are our two fantastic co-hosts, Messer Engine and Rohain. Thanks for joining me today, guys. How's it going?
Great, Jolly. How are you?
Oh, I'm fantastic. How's it going, Rohain?
I'm doing pretty well. Not much, really. No, it's hot. It's hot today and disgusting. That's how it is.
It's called summer.
How about you?
It's called summer, Rohain.
You are always busting my balls. I'm going to make you regret that.
Mess, you practically live in Canada. I don't think you know what hot means.
Savage.
All right, guys. So it's been a week since we recorded last. I know that I sprung a lot on you guys very suddenly. I know you've needed some time to digest that, so we've been sure to give that to you. So what have you been up to for the last week? Anything interesting or exciting?
Yeah, I mean, since the last episode, I've been trying to do a little bit of research on what we're going to be doing so that I'm a little more prepared. I have been watching King Nappy's Emerald Nuzlocke run to get an idea of what's going on. And I got to tell you, Jolly, the drama. The fucking drama, dude. Like, I'm hooked. I can't stop watching. So it should be really interesting. I don't think I'm going to be half as entertaining, but It should be a good time.
It's okay. Like, if anything that I have learned from my streaming and YouTube days, people are always entertained to watch a complete goofball kind of bumble his way around things, and you have that role completely set. So, anyway, as for myself, mostly a lot of work. I have been doing some reading on Nuzlocke, and I have watched a couple episodes of that very same Nuzlocke run, and I started a personal Nuzlocke run in Emerald, and I have already died, so this is already looking up for me.
Don't feel bad at all, Rohain. The first game I ever Nuzlocked was actually, I forget if it was X or Y, but it was one of those two games, and admittedly, I played with a pretty strict rule set for a beginner, but I think I had to start over about 10 times before I actually beat the damn thing. So it's you're not alone. I promise you're not alone.
Okay, well, that makes me feel a little better.
So yeah, good. I'm glad you guys have had a pretty good week. Mine's been kind of stressful. It seems like everything I own is determined to break all at the same time, which is not good. Yeah, we've had major appliances and vehicles and doors of all fucking things all breaking down at once, which is so wonderful being a relatively new homeowner and having to deal with all that shit. But no, it's good. I've been trying to figure out how to stream. Again, all the relevant software and things like that are still very, very new to me. I haven't put nearly as many hours into it yet as I probably should have. I've always been the kind of guy anyway who will wait until the last minute and put 12 hours into a paper the day before it's due. So I'm sure it's going to be the same way with all the streaming software. I played a ton of the Pokemon TCG online this week, which tends to be how I play it. Like, I really enjoy it, but I play it in bursts. I won't touch it for 2 months, and then I will play it almost every waking hour for a couple of days. I don't know why, but that's how I consume that particular media. But no, I'm really digging the new set.
Yeah, the Rise of the Guardians, right?
Guardians Rising. It is. But yeah, tomato, Tapu Koko, whatever.
There's guardians involved, and they are apparently rising, so there you go.
I gotta tell you, the way they do card acquisition in that game drives me a little bananas. I mean, the game has really great systems for earning cards for free built into it, which is really awesome. But there are times when I'm like, man, I really want to actually get into this and build a competitive deck to play. And then I go, oh, I got to go to the store? Oh, that seems weird. Physical cards. All right.
I have a feeling that we're at some point going to have to do a bonus episode on Pokemon TCG Online. I feel like it would be a good thing.
Oh, Rohan, if you haven't checked it out yet, I absolutely encourage it. Like, it's really, really well done. It's probably my favorite online TCG, and that's including Hearthstone, so that's pretty high praise. I don't think it's quite as well balanced of a game as Hearthstone is, but it's still it's just a hell of a lot of fun. I play it on a very, very casual level when I do play it. Like, I tend to use the pre-made decks for a lot of the same reasons that you said. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a pain in the butt to get the appropriate cards to actually build like a really good deck for yourself in the game. But yeah, I mean, if the interest is out there, if you guys want to see it, I'd be happy to stream some of that too. So if you want to see your boy Jolly getting bodied online in TCG, throw me some of your QR codes for your packs if you're not using them, and I'll go on and use them to just get absolutely stomped. Okay, so that's what we've been up to. So going over the audio from last week's episode, there were some notes that we had that we kind of just wanted to go over for everybody publicly. First of all, Rohan, I know you did the editing for the episode. I know you said that you had some notes you wanted to go over. Do you want to go ahead and go through that for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So my role in this podcast is I am actually the main editor. Jolly, of course, has creative say. And I first want to apologize for some audio issues that you will notice in the first episode. You'll notice the difference between episode one and this episode is going to be considerably different. There were some settings that I had set incorrectly, which caused my personal audio to be a little bit messed up. So you'll notice also that in the beginning of the audio, my voice kind of is just absolute garbage. And then later I decided it was just easier to re-record the statements that I had said and then put that in there using correct settings. So in the future, we shouldn't run into that. But again, we're still new. I've never really done just audio. So that is my promise to you, the dear listener. And the one other thing that I wanted to mention, I think this was you, Tanner, who had mentioned that Pokemon was released here in the U.S. in 96, and that is actually not correct. It was released in 98.
Yeah, Jolly brought that up during the episode last time. I had my dates wrong. but hey, there it is.
Just goes to show.
Whatever.
We are in no shape or form professionals at this.
Yeah.
Be easy on us.
We're going to make a couple small errors like that. I know that at one point, Mess had mentioned that he played Black and White, and I'm almost positive that he meant Diamond and Pearl. I don't think he's actually played through Black and White yet. I know at one point I said that Team Magma did nothing wrong, and I referenced Free Archie when Archie is in fact the leader of Team Aqua. I meant Free Maxie. So, you know, again, there's going to be little boo-boos like that. We're going to keep rolling along. We appreciate it if you point them out to us, but yeah, we're not going to get our nose too bent out of shape about it. It's just, we're going to slip of the tongue. But yeah, definitely there was some sloppy audio last week. That's not all Rohane's fault. You know, that's not all on the editing end. You know, we're all new to recording. I know that I kept spinning in my chair away from my microphone because that's smart. We're all new to this. We're only going to get better from here, guys. So thank you for your patience. There were a couple of things that I wanted to address. Specifically, I had reached out to the greater Pokemon community through Reddit for some feedback. Since we don't yet have our own audience to take feedback through social media and email, I reached out to Reddit and I asked for their feedback on a couple of things. And one of the pieces of feedback that kept coming back to us over and over was I mentioned that we were, you know, going to be playing Red, Blue, and Yellow. And people kept saying, oh, well, you know, red, blue, and yellow are just dog shit. You shouldn't touch those. They're glitchy. They're old. They look bad. If you want to play Kanto, you should start with Fire Red and Leaf Green. If you want to play Johto, then you should do Heart Gold, Soul Silver. Don't play the originals. Only play the remakes. And guys, we know. we know that the remakes are out there. We know that they are objectively better games in those settings. But we're playing the originals intentionally. We want those glitches. We want those errors. Specifically, in addition to playing them on their own merits now, we want to compare how those games feel compared to how they felt to us when we first played them. So 2015, et cetera, years ago.
Never.
Yeah, exactly. In the case of Rohan, how they feel from somebody who has absolutely fresh eyes, who never laid hands or eyes on them before. So, I appreciate the feedback. That's definitely valuable for someone who doesn't know to know that those games were remade and that those remakes are objectively better quality. But we are doing what we're doing for a reason. We will play those remakes when we get to them. They're not going to be a part of our primary challenge. We're going to do other fun, interesting things with those. But we know that Red and Blue and Gold and Silver were remade. We're playing the originals anyway. Also, this is something that we haven't received feedback on yet, but I know that it's only a matter of time. It's coming, and it's going to come whether I say anything or not, but I still want to get out in front of it, and I still want to say it. We are not what you would really consider power gamers. We're not running the most hardcore or extreme rule sets. That's not what this show is. That's not what we're about. We're very much normal guys. And again, in the case of Mess and Rohan, they've never done Pokemon with challenge rule sets before at all. So yeah, if you're looking for that crazy hardcore content, if you're looking for, you know, wedlocks with item limits and you can't heal in the Pokemon Center and all sorts of crazy shit, like, cool. Like, that's totally valid. There are tons of people out there who are making that really hard content. That's just not what we're doing. So don't bitch to us that we're noobs or that we're not doing the content that you want to see. Go find the content that you want to see. Like, it's out there, I promise. It's just not what this show is, at least not yet.
Now, of course, now that you've mentioned that, they are still, due to the inherent nature of the internet, they are still going to do that very thing that you asked them to not do.
Yeah, but now I have something I can point to and be like, motherfuckers, listen, we're a podcast. All you do is listen. Okay, so that's everything I had. Mess, did you have anything regarding episode one that you wanted to go over, buddy?
No, I had a great time. That's pretty much it. Everyone else was like, I'm so sorry for the world. I'm just happy to be here.
All right, fan-fucking-tastic. So, gentlemen, we've had a week since we last recorded. I know that you both said that you had done a little bit of research into the Nuzlocke rule set since we recorded last, that you'd both kind of done your own deep dives on that. So now that you've done that, you both said you'd looked into some of King Nappy's stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's good. That's really good, actually. He's a very, very solid Poketuber. He makes very solid Nuzlocke runs. I would advise, if you want to keep doing kind of your own research, actually check out some of Maryland's stuff as well. Just because Nappy's really good and he's really, really entertaining. But again, a lot of the stuff that he's producing these days is on the much, much more challenging end of the spectrum. It's much more extreme, crazy challenges. Whereas Maryland has a lot more, and particularly recent content, that's much more vanilla Nuzlocke. So if you're wanting to get more of a hands-on feel for what we're going to be doing, he's a really good content creator to check out. But yeah, good. I'm glad that you guys have a little bit more of a frame of reference. Now, I'd like to spend a little bit of time deep diving into the rule set. I know that we went over it in very broad terms in episode one, and that was primarily to avoid confusing you guys because, you know, again, you had no real reference point for it. Now that you do, you know, even though it's only three rules and it's really pretty simple, there's a lot of different ways to interpret those rules. And those are things that we need to go over. We need to decide before we start playing, since we're playing together and competitively, we all need to interpret them the same way. So yeah, let's get to it. So before we begin our deep dive into the rule set, did either of you guys have anything that you wanted to go over, or any like general questions?
No, I watched all like 30 or 40 episodes of that Emerald Run before it ended. So I have a pretty good idea of what we're doing. I mean, obviously, I might have missed small things here or there because I've never personally done it, but I think I have a pretty good idea of what we're up against.
Yeah, and if the comic, the original Nuzlocke comic, is anything to be believed, I'm fully expecting to get my ass handed to me, even though last week I talked so much shit. And I am, in fact, still talking shit.
Well, that's totally okay. Again, it's always a risk when you run a Nuzlocke that you're going to get bodied. And again, we're gonna go over our particular like challenge rule set after we go over the Nuzlocke rules. But just for the record, guys, there is a mechanism to where if you white out and you wipe, you get the opportunity to catch up to the rest of us. Like, you can start over. You don't just forfeit the rest of that game. Like, you can restart and catch up. You've just got to catch the fuck up. Okay, so let's get into the Nuzlocke rules. And actually, I'll probably record a little something to put actually before the episode, because I meant to say this at the very beginning and I forgot because I'm bad at this. But just for the record, guys, this particular episode is probably going to be a little bit drier than most of our content. We're going to be going over rules, and those rules are very important. They're the framework for what we're doing here. But I understand that that's not going to be what everybody checks out this podcast for. That's probably not what you're tuning in for. So if you're not interested in the rules, if you already understand the Nuzlocke rules and you figure that you can kind of pick up our challenge as you go, that's cool. That's totally valid. Episode 3 is going to be a lot more of the content that you're actually tuning in for. You know, our stories and opinions on the first set of games in particular and the beginning of our actual challenge. So if you're not interested in the rule set, no shame in bowing out. You can totally appreciate the entire podcast without this episode. If you're interested in the rules, however, either you're new to the rule set and you just want to learn more, or you're just kind of interested to see how we're going to do things, that's what we're doing today. Either way, both of these episodes are probably going to be uploaded on the same day. You're not missing out on a week's worth of content. Just check them out in the order that you appreciate. All right, so with that being said, Nuzlocke rules. So once again, rule number one for a Nuzlocke is that the trainer may only capture the first Pokemon that they encounter on a given route. Now, this is probably the rule that has the most interpretation involved, because there's a number of different things that can affect it. So before I just start ranting and raving and going on and on, guys, you're new to the rule set. What questions or clarification do you have or do you need regarding the encounter rule?
So I've seen this handled a little differently a few times, but like static encounters, like let's say the legendary birds or Snorlax in Kanto, because he's sitting his fat ass in the road, or the Eevee that you pick up in one of the cities that I can't remember. How is that handled? Because you might have walked through some grass on the way to that Snorlax and ended up with an encounter for root whatever. Like, how does that end up playing out?
Okay, that's an excellent question, and that's one of those things that can be interpreted a number of different ways. So that's something that we'll have to decide how we're going to treat that. Now, ultimately, you brought up two different things, which are static encounters, which are wild Pokemon out in the wild that you have to run into in a certain place, versus gifts, which are like the Eevee in Celadon City, where an NPC just freely gives it to you. You don't have to battle it. You don't have to capture it. It's just given to you. So those are actually two different things as far as what we're talking about is concerned. We're actually going to discuss gifts later. So we'll discuss the static encounters now. So things like Snorlax, like the legendary birds, etc. So there's a couple of different interpretations for how you treat those. Some people treat static encounters like a bonus encounter. So you run into your Snorlax, you run into your Zapdos, whatever, you can catch it. Most people don't allow the use of legendaries, period, in their Nuzlocke runs. So it's less so for the legendary birds, but more for things like Snorlax in the road, things like Kecleon in the Gen 3 games where he's invisible and you have to do that shit. How do we treat those? Some people just treat them like bonus encounters. You just get to catch them, and they're just yours. Some people say that you can catch them if they're your first encounter on the route. So, you know, if you want that Snorlax and you have to run through three patches of grass to get to him, you've either got to pray that you don't run into a wild Pokemon, or use repels to actively avoid wild Pokemon. And some people just treat them as off limits, as no, you don't get the static encounter, you have to get the random thing from the grass. The rule that I've always personally preferred is that you get a choice. So if you want something from the grass, then go in the patch of grass first, get your first encounter there, and then go beat up the Snorlax. If you want the Snorlax, then make sure that you get to the Snorlax before you encounter something in the grass. I feel like that's more than fair. The only place where that gets muddy is there's a couple of places in a couple of the games where you can't get to the grass before you battle the static encounter. I know that specifically the Snorlax in X and Y is particularly bad for that. There's a ton of really cool Mon in the grass on that route. You can't access any of that grass until you fight the Snorlax. So by all means, guys, give your input. But what I'm thinking for situations like that, where you have to battle the static before you can access the grass, is that you still get to pick whether you're catching the static encounter or whether you're ignoring it and going for the grass, but you have to pick before you start that battle. So you can't knock out the Snorlax and then be like, oh, I didn't want it, I'm going for the grass anyway. Like, you have to, before you even go up and talk to it, you have to either say, okay, I'm catching the Snorlax, it's my encounter, or no, I want something in the grass, I'm disregarding it.
All right, that's fair.
How about, and I haven't seen, granted, in my limited research, I haven't seen this idea, so you can totally shoot it down, but what if we can have both, but before we can use the encounter, one of the party has to die?
I mean, there are a number of variant rule sets that, like, you can't swap out. Like, you can only get a new Pokemon out of the PC if something dies. Those are going to be considerably more challenging than what we're doing. Those are things that we can definitely consider down the road if this gets to be too easy. But again, I don't want to overload you guys, particularly being new to the rule set, and then just have you be whiting out every single episode having to catch up. And that's not fun.
Yeah, that's totally true.
While we want to be entertaining, we also want to have fun doing it. So let's put a pin in that. I think for now the best one is going to be, again, the middle of the road, where you can choose between the static encounter or the random encounter in the grass or in the water or wherever, but you have to make that choice before you battle.
Yeah, I actually, I'm on board with that one, and I think Tanner was too, so let's just go with that one.
Cool. Okay, so what other questions did you have about Rule 1?
I actually have a question. Safari Zone, how is that handled?
Okay, well, that's another one that can be interpreted a number of different ways. And again, so in at least the Kanto, I'm wanting to say in the first three gens, actually. I'm wanting to say in Generation 1, Red, Blue, Yellow, in Generation 2, Gold, Silver, Crystal, and in Generation, or does Generation 2 even have a Safari Zone? I don't remember. We'll come to that when we get there. But definitely in the Generation 3 Safari Zone as well, it's split into separate areas, and each area has different encounters. So with that, as well as how difficult it is to capture anything in the Safari Zone anyway without it running away, since you can't battle it, people treat the Safari Zone a couple of different ways. There are the purists who just say, first encounter, you catch it. If it runs away, tough shit, you don't get a Safari catch. Yeah, I mean, which is valid. Really, that's the most faithful interpretation of the rules. Or there are people who say because it's split into four, you get one encounter in each of those four areas. So each of the areas with a different encounter table, you get one encounter, which they argue that with the catch rate in the Safari Zone, you're probably only coming out of there with one Pokemon anyway. So there's that. There are also people who just say that just for the Safari Zone, because wild Pokemon run with such frequency, you have to keep trying to catch every encounter until you catch one. And then once you've caught one, you're just done for the Safari Zone. So if you run into a Rhyhorn, that Rhyhorn runs away. Next, you run into a Chansey, that Chansey runs away. Next, you run into a Tauros, it stays in the ball. That Tauros is your one encounter. You can't catch anything else.
I like that one idea better. I think the catch, keep trying until you actually catch one. I think it fits along with the theme of Rule 1, because Rule 1, in its basic, in its true form, is the trainer may only capture, well,
Well, but it has to be the first. If you knock it out, if something else happens, then you don't get one. If you run into an Abra as your first encounter and it teleports away, you don't get one. That's always been a part of Nuzlocke.
Yeah.
Ooh. As far as zones, it's such a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Like, to begin with.
It's... Maybe this one we can bend the rule a little and have some leniency. And, keep the first one that we actually capture.
I would say that for our first game, at least, that's probably a fair interpretation. Again, you guys are brand new to Nuzlocke. You're probably going to have more than a few losses by that point in the game. And the Safari Zone has some really strong Pokemon. You're going to need that one. So, yes, we'll re-examine it before the next game with a Safari Zone. But for Red and Blue, I'm perfectly fine with allowing exactly one capture. But you have to try to capture everything you encounter. So you can't just go, well, I don't want that one. Let's get the next one.
Okay. Cool. Trades?
Are you referring to trades like with each other or in-game trades?
In-game trades. And each other, I suppose.
So this is also, again, something that's up for interpretation to a degree. It's not something that's directly referenced by the original Nuzlocke. But generally, the community accepted rule, as far as trades are concerned, is that if you choose to, you can allow trading to evolve. So if you have a Graveler, a Kadabra, a Machoke, etc., then you can trade it to meet the evolution requirement and then trade it right back. And generally speaking, that's the only trading that is allowed in a Nuzlocke run. Half the point is to establish bonds with your Pokemon. You're clearly not doing that if you're trading it to Youngster Joey.
Youngster Joey really needs a Jigglypuff, Jolly.
He does. He's been on that goddamn Rattata for almost 20 years now, and that's sad.
Jeez. Brutal.
But yeah, so that's generally the thing. I think that's pretty fair. I don't think you really need to take any of the in-game trades personally. If you guys really particularly want one, then I suppose we can consider it. But yeah, again, and half the point is to use what you get, to let fate deal you your Pokemon. And when you trade it away for that Onix, then that kind of spits in the face of that, of the spirit of that rule.
Well, probability-wise, the chances that you would catch the Pokemon that you need to trade in the first place is so minimal when you're only catching the first Pokemon in an area, that it's probably not even going to come up.
Well, yes and no. Very frequently, those people who offer those in-game trades are asking for one of the most common Pokemon in the routes around the town they're in. So, like, the one in... God, I can never remember the names of the Johto cities, but the city of the first gym, Falconer's gym... that city, there's an NPC who offers to trade you an Onix for a Bellsprout, and right outside there you have like a 75% chance of encountering a Bellsprout. So you will most likely have a Bellsprout to trade that one.
Seems legit.
So, all right. So we can assume that like areas like Mount Moon are like one area, because all of Mount Moon, even though there's lots of ladders and chutes and ladders, is just Mount Moon.
Yes. That is absolutely correct. If you want something that's only in a deeper floor of a cave complex, it's not in the upper floors, and you're going to want to bring some Repel Sun to get down there. Because, yeah, the whole thing is one area. And for the record, it is one area, not necessarily one route. So things like caves, towns, even some of the buildings like the Pokemon Mansion in Gen 1 that have wild Pokemon in them, those are their own distinct area. You can catch a Pokemon there. If there's a body of water in the town, you can fish or you can surf for one. You know, or even things like, again, that Pokemon Mansion is in or on Cinnabar Island. That's not your Cinnabar Island encounter. It's your Pokemon Mansion encounter. You can still either fish something out of the water on Cinnabar. You can still revive your fossil, etc.
Speaking of fossils, eggs, like, I don't know how common breeding is in Nuzlocke runs, but, like...
That won't be a problem for the early games.
But yeah, like, is, for egg hatching, like, does it count when your egg hatches, or who are also in a similar vein, kind of fossil Pokemon? Is it your encounter when you pick up the fossil, or when you revive it?
No, those are really solid questions. How I've always personally interpreted those rules is when you pick up the fossil, it's not a Pokemon, it's an item. It goes in your bag. It does not become a Pokemon until you revive it at the scientist. So I've always considered a fossil Pokemon, if you choose to revive one, to be the encounter for the town where you revive it, not where you pick it up. Because when you picked it up, it was an item. Eggs, when relevant, because there are several of the games with nurseries where even if you don't breed any yourself, the first time you talk to them, they'll offer you an egg. Because eggs, even though they're not like, you know, usable when you first get them, they are Pokemon. They take up a party slot. I've always considered eggs to be from the area where you are given the egg for that reason.
So where you're given the egg, not when the egg hatches.
Yes, you can be in a totally different place when the egg hatches. It still counts as your encounter. In my interpretation of the rules, where you were given it, because that's where it entered your party.
Okay. I hope you're, like, keeping notes of, like, what we're choosing while we're doing this. Because I'm not.
Yeah, I was telling Jolly that I'm making a spreadsheet, a shared spreadsheet. So when you catch something, you can hop into the shared spreadsheet and just jot down what you caught and what route it was on or what area. And there'll be a little color key for whether the Pokemon is alive in your party, dead, etc. So that we can quickly see where everybody is at.
We will have to post this on the website and update it weekly so people can have a visual view if they're not, you know, interested in watching a stream.
Yeah, once we get a nice professional-looking website up, we're a little bit behind on that stuff, guys, and I apologize. It's going to come. It's absolutely coming down the road. When the episodes start posting, we're going to have social media, and that's going to be about it. We'll have Facebook. We'll have Twitter. And the nice, well-laid-out website will be coming down the road. But yeah, so rule one. Again, eggs count where you're given the egg. Fossils count where you revive it, because that's where in both cases where it enters your party. Another thing that's really worth noting is HM moves. You know, HM moves are so important in every generation up to the current one. So if you require an HM move to progress in the game, like you're at a point where you have to surf to get where you're going, and let's say you don't have any water types anymore because poor Squirtle bit the dust, then... At that point, if you don't have any legitimate captured Pokemon that can learn the HM that you need to progress, then you can either pull one out of your graveyard if you want to be morbid, and use it strictly for the HM. Don't use it to battle at all, but just use it to do what you need to do. Or you can just catch one that, again, can't battle whatsoever, but is only used for that HM to progress. Now, as soon as you catch something that is capable of learning that move, even if it's a garbage move like Cut and you don't want it, too bad, you have to release that HM slave and you have to give it to your actual Pokemon.
And that kind of ties into my next question that I'm going to ask, which is similar to the Safari question. What if the first encounter flees or faints?
Again, if you get an unlucky crit,
you're hosed,
and you kill that Pidgey before you throw the Pokeball, then that's just kind of tough shit. Or if it's an Aberrant, it teleports away. You don't get one at that point.
It'll just be dead, Rohan, and I will call you a Pidgey murderer.
I'm gonna need a Pokemon with sleep. Wait, was sleep a thing in Gen 1?
No, sleep was absolutely a thing in Gen 1. Actually, if anything, sleep was better in Gen 1 because it took a whole turn to wake up.
Sleep OP for Nuzlocke runs.
Sleep is brutal. But status moves are going to be very, very useful. False Swipe, once we get to... I think False Swipe was instituted in Gen 2. It might be Gen 3. I forget exactly. But False Swipe, once it becomes available, is also going to be incredibly useful because it can't knock things out. So for capture, those are good things to have. Or alternatively, just throwing balls and praying is also... You can't kill it if you don't hit it.
You got to watch out for that poison, too. Gen 1, it hits you while you walk.
Oh, yeah.
All the way up through... I think Gen 4 is where it stops killing you. Like, it still hits you when you walk, but if you hit 1 HP, it stops doing damage. But all the way up through there, yeah, it can totally kill you while you're walking.
Brutal.
So, yeah, be careful. Always have those antidotes. I think we've done a pretty thorough dive of Rule 1. Just a couple of other... And these are, like, the really surface things, so I'm surprised that you guys didn't ask those. But... For the record, before you get Pokeballs, your encounters don't count. So it's not going to be a case where you have to go out on Route 1 and you encounter a Rattata before you're even allowed to catch things and it's tough shit. No. Actually, the Nuzlocke does not start until you get Pokeballs. So if you get knocked out in your initial... in your initial trainer battle with Assbutt... or if you get knocked out on the way to the Pokemon Center the first time to get the package for Oak, you don't have to restart at that point. That's silly. The challenge starts once you gain the ability to capture.
Okay. I'm going to restart 5 minutes into my game.
Yeah, that first trainer battle is such a shit show sometimes. Like, it's a really good thing that it doesn't count until you get the Pokeballs.
Seriously.
You know, I've done that before where I've lost the first battle and I've went, well, fair is fair, and I've restarted. But definitely not with us streaming. Like, that's just wasting time on tedious bullshit at that point. Our viewers deserve better than that. So, no, yeah. It doesn't count until you get your Pokeballs. And for the record, for our challenge, we get to keep our starters. That's not the way everyone Nuzlocke's. Some people say as soon as you get your first encounter, you need to release your starter. That first encounter becomes your starter. That's not how we're doing things. I don't know about you guys, but to me personally, the choice of a starter is just it's integral to that Pokemon experience.
Well, not to mention, from what I've read, like, the point of having a starter to begin with is they're reasonably good Pokemon with good stats, and a lot of times Nuzlocke runs, and granted I haven't played any, so I don't know this for sure, but the feedback that I've gotten online is that the death of a starter can usually totally fuck over the whole run.
Interesting.
Oh, for sure. Releasing starter is definitely a rule that it is meant to drastically increase challenge, and it does. It's very successful at that. But again, we're starting with a very, very basic challenge. This is Babby's first Nuzlocke. We'll look into strengthening the rules as we move forward and as you guys get more comfortable. But for now, and honestly, I think, again, for this entire series, we'll be keeping our starters. Starters are important. They're important for the feelies.
Okay, yeah. Rule 2?
Yeah, so Rule 2 in the Nuzlocke Challenge is if a Pokemon faints, it is considered dead and must be released. So again, this is where it starts to get really, really hard. So what questions did you guys have about the death rule?
Not too much. What happens if we, like, there are occasions sometimes when, I don't think this happens in Gen 1, but there are times when someone will come up to you and be like, I'm going to heal your Pokemon. Like, when you're walking somewhere and that Pokemon might be dead and need to be released when you got back to the Pokemon Center or dropped in the graveyard box, and then you end up in another battle, like, your rival comes and heals you and then you got to fight him. Like, how do you deal with that? Because the Pokemon's technically dead, but you can't end the battle until all the Pokemon are downed. Does that make sense? I don't think I'm explaining that well.
No, that makes sense, at least to me.
No, that's actually something that actually happened to me in Y, which is where, yeah, like, if you have your Pokemon in the lead of your party, and it gets knocked out in a big story battle, and then they automatically heal you and go straight into another story battle, it's been healed, and it's still in the front, so it's in the battle, even though it's a zombie at that point. So, hopefully that won't come up, but if it does, I just immediately switch. So you just have to basically forfeit that turn, which is unfortunate. But yeah, I just immediately swap out to a valid Pokemon.
You can't see my face, but I am making a sad face. I like the idea of zombie Pokemon. Nah, it's fine.
So
it's totally fine.
To elaborate on my question, so let's say you have a totally terrible battle, and technically all your alive Pokemon, quote-unquote, get wiped, and the last person in your party is the dead Pokemon. Do you just, like, turn off the Game Boy in rage? Or do you just, like, send it out? And what if it only has, like, It doesn't have Lear to just sit there and leer at it while it dies.
I mean, at that point, I think it's kind of a moot point, because either way, the run is over. You have lost. You have effectively whited out. Whether you send it out and fight through and give it a chance at redemption and actually win it, you're still not continuing the run either way. Your whole party's dead. So, I mean, yeah, you could either just turn off the Game Boy at that point, restart, and say, okay, we're done here. You can send it out and finish the battle, give it a shot at redemption before you erase the save because you've lost. There's a couple of, it doesn't really matter how you handle that moment, but either way, at that point, if everything in your party has died and one of them is just kind of again in that weird zombie status, you've whited out, you've lost.
Okay.
Rohane, did you have any questions regarding the death rule?
No, the death rule I think is pretty well. We already covered dead Pokemon using HM moves. Fainting out of battle?
Yeah, well, yeah, and if you faint anywhere, poison. Like, yeah, if you're walking and you get fainted by poison, then yes, that's still a faint, it's still a death. A couple of things that are worth noting regarding Rule 2. You don't have to release your dead Pokemon. If you're super sentimental about it, you can set up a box in your PC and just kind of stick them all in there as a graveyard. Especially in Gen 1, I don't recommend it just because switching between boxes in Gen 1 was such an enormous pain in the butthole. you're probably going to be better off to just release that son of a bitch and move on. Personally, I release mine. But if you want to hang on to them for sentimental reasons, that's valid. You're allowed to do so. You just can't use them. Now, if you're in, like, a dungeon or in the middle of a long route and you have a Pokemon die, you don't have to immediately go to a Pokemon Center. You don't have to, like, backtrack to go back and release something and then go back through the dungeon. You can keep progressing forward just at your soonest convenience the next time you're at a Pokemon Center. Then you have to release or box it. And on that same vein, if you're inside of a dungeon and that dungeon has strength puzzles and your only strength user is your dead Pokemon, then again, yes, you can continue to progress. You can continue to use that strength outside of battle to progress through the dungeon. Now, once you get back to the Pokemon Center, as we discussed previously, you've got to either release it if you have another valid strength user, or use it only for strength until you catch one. So that's how that works. And again, those are things that don't come up very frequently, but when they do, you might be sitting there going, oh shit, how am I supposed to handle that? Well, just so you know, again, if you're like in the middle of Mount Moon, you don't have to use Dig to go back to the Pokemon Center outside to release your Pidgey that just got bodied by a golem. God, that'd be terrible if there was golems inside Mount Moon. By a Geodude! Baby golem.
Baby golem. That just can punch you in the face really, really hard.
Cheeto Nugget, yeah. You don't have to drop everything to go release a dead Pokemon. You just can't use it in battle ever again.
It's fine. Okay. Find a river to dump its body in at your earliest convenience.
Dude.
That's what it is.
No, we don't do that. They're our pals.
Well, they're corpses.
Well, sure, you can put them on a little boat and give them the send-off he deserves. Maybe with a flaming arrow and everything?
There we go. That old-timey Irish-Scottish burial? I think it's Scottish. Viking. It's Viking. I don't know.
Scottish people probably do it, too. I don't know. I am one. I don't know what they do.
History with Rohane.
This could be, like, a side podcast of mine. Like, Rohane tells shitty history.
Now, if we're going to do a history podcast, it needs to be drunk history. But back to Pokemon. So only one other core rule of the Nuzlocke rule set, and as we all know, it is Rohane's favorite rule. All captured Pokemon must be nicknamed.
Fuck.
I feel...
It'll be okay. I promise it'll be okay.
I feel like your response is not at all proportional to what you're being asked to do.
Probably not, but I'll deal with it. It's okay. Do this.
Ryan, just do this. Make a list of all your coworkers that you don't like and name your Pokemon after them.
That's My coworkers are planning on listening to this, so danger goose.
No, a naming theme is actually a really, really valid strategy to keep yourself from getting kind of blocked in the moment. I've done some pretty fun ones. I did one where I just named them a lot of like really like unusual and overly fancy people names. Like, God, now I can't even remember what anyone's name was in that particular run, because of course I can't. I know I had a Vivian named Terrence, so that was, he was pretty cool. Yeah. And I think I had a fletchling named Beatrice.
That's, your Pokemon team was sounding overly English.
It was pretty cool. Like that was a lot of fun. I also did the successful run, the one that I completed, was a Bob's Burgers naming theme. I named them all after characters from Bob's Burgers, and Bob the Crocodile carried my team. He was the MVP by far. That's so that was hilarious. Also pretty fun. But yeah, you can always make a list of names around a certain theme or idea so that you can just pull from those at need. Again, we're playing on Twitch. You can always go to the Twitch chat and say, "Hey guys, I don't know what to name this fucking thing. What do you think?" And let them do it for you.
That's true.
That seems like a really great way to have thousands of offensive names. Anyways, it's neither here nor there.
Right. Well, if I had to guess, if you ask Twitch, you're just going to get 1.5 million. Name it after this character from Undertale.
Or you'll just get Twitch memes. So, Kappa and PJ Salt.
Lots and lots of Kappa. But yeah, no, nicknaming is actually a pretty cool thing. Like, I agree with you, Alex. Before I started Nuzlocking, I almost never nicknamed my Pokemon. Now I nickname them even when I'm not Nuzlocking.
You say that you agree with me, yet it's a previous episode. My balls were so sore from you busting them.
Well, that's because you were being a little bitch titty. Like, don't be a bitch, and then I won't call you a bitch.
Go fuck yourself. It's fine. I will get over it. Moving on.
You will persevere, I promise. So those are the three main rules, and I feel like we've got a pretty strong grasp on those at this point. There are a number of clauses that are commonly added, or additional rules that are commonly added to tailor the Nuzlocke run to the particular player's needs or desires as far as difficulty and content. A lot of people restrict their run, so they'll either say, okay, we're playing on set battle mode, which I don't know if you guys have played with the battle modes in the menu options in the Pokemon games, but this is actually like a hard menu option. It's not like a player rule set. And on set battle, it removes the free swap after you faint an enemy Pokemon. So, you know, normally you faint a Pokemon and it'll go, oh, rival trainer is sending in their Arcanine. Do you want to switch? Takes that option away. They just send out with their, just like you were playing against a person. So that's probably the most common optional rule, and that's probably the first one that we'll be adding as you guys start to get the hang of Nuzlocke. I really like that one because, again, it makes it more like you're battling a person and less like you're battling the computer. It's less restricting you and more evening the playing field, making things more fair again.
Okay.
But we're not starting there because, again, baby steps. Other restrictions that people will add to their Nuzlocke runs is banning the use of healing items, either altogether, saying you can only heal at Pokemon centers, or just saying you can't use them in battle. Again, this is a restriction that I also kind of like because you can't use potions in a Wi-Fi battle. So it's a really good way, playing with those restrictions, to prepare yourself for playing against people, because you're treating the computer more like an enemy player. So again, not something we'll be starting with, but that's also a solid option down the road. Some people go really hardcore and restrict or ban the use of the Pokemon Center. Say you can only heal with items that you purchase or find. And some people also will ban the Pokemon Center and ban purchased items and say you can only heal with items that you find on the ground. Which, that shit is knuckin' futz. And as we've already discussed, those are not the types of runs that we are doing here. So if you are looking for super hardcore restricted runs, I could point you to a number of really cool YouTubers. We are not going to be those guys.
I feel like that last one would increase my blood pressure to astronomical levels, as well as increase my salt intake past the daily recommended amount.
Well,
in a world with no hospitals and no pharmaceuticals, Can you survive? Can this 10-year-old survive? Awful.
Remember, the kid is 10.
Yeah, what the... Honestly, that is a really good point. I've been rewatching the old, like, season one Indigo League show, and Ash is 10, and I keep thinking to myself, what society just takes their 10-year-olds, sends them on some journey to somewhere that no one's really fucking sure where, and is like, here's a pet, good luck, hope you don't die.
Oh, and then the 10-year-olds make money by basically, like, cockfighting. Like, what?
Pokemon's a really dark place when you think about it as an adult.
I still just don't understand why it is that you participate in a cockfight, essentially, with actual gangsters who want to steal your shit and wish you harm, and they just go, oh man, you beat me, here's some money, I'm just going to stand here and let you ransack our base now. But...
there's so many just things that don't make sense. And, like, how old are the gym leaders? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, we're not here to poke holes in all the plot flaws, in particularly the original games. But they are there. They are definitely there. And that's a discussion worth having for sure. So the other restriction that a lot of people will put on their runs, and this is one that we are using, is level limit, which is saying we're not going to over level the game. And we're not doing it actually to increase our challenge as much as we are to level the playing field for our challenge, for our PvP battle specifically. We don't want it to turn into just like a who has the most free time dick measuring contest where we're just running and grinding in the tall grass every week so that we can just out level and smack each other in the face. So what we're going to be doing is we are going to be limiting ourselves to the level of a given gym leader's highest Pokemon when we fight him. So Brock, for instance, in Red, Blue, and Yellow, his highest level is level 14. So we need to be no higher than 14 going into that fight. Now, if you level above 14 in that fight, that's okay. That'll be allowed for that week for the PvP fight. Much like a lot of our rules, the caveat there is don't abuse the shit out of it. So don't go into the Brock fight with all of your Pokemon at 14, just needing a sliver to be 15, and then rotate them all in to get them all to 15. Don't.
That's shady.
If we're going to have video of each other's gameplay. We're putting this shit on Twitch. And if anybody's being an asshole, then we're going to have to rework the rules. Don't be an asshole, guys. Don't abuse the rules. But no, if you have a level 14 Bulbasaur going into Brock and you use it pretty much exclusively because it's a Bulbasaur against Brock, why the fuck wouldn't you? And it levels to 15 in the fight. That's not a big deal. You can use it in the PvP battle that week. But yeah, that's how we're handling level limit. Maximum of the gym leader's highest level going into the gym leader fight, so you have to account for the trainer fights leading up to him too. Is that fair, Mess?
Yeah, that's fine. I think I'm gonna have a little difficulty just gauging going into the gym with the trainers in between, like how much experience I'm gonna pick up, because those fights, if I remember, give a pretty good amount of XP. But yeah, that's totally cool.
Well, and for the record, if you beat Brock and you're still a little under level for the week, like let's say you undershot it and so your Bulbasaur is only 13 instead of 14, you can go out to the tall grass and grind up a little bit of EXP you need. Like, you shouldn't be doing any grinding other than that after you beat the gym leader, but if you just need a little bump to reach the level limit, that's fine.
Okay, that works.
Cool. So there are some clauses as well that are very commonly added to Nuzlocke runs to tailor the run, and several of these we will be using. Specifically, the most relevant one is dupes clause, or duplicates clause, which is to prevent you from having a team of six goddamn Rattatas. No one wants a team of six Rattatas, and it's not interesting. So dupes clause states that, you know, in the Nuzlocke you have to catch your first encounter. However, if your first encounter is something that you've already got on your team, you've already captured, or that you had on your team that fainted, or the way we're interpreting Doom's Claws is if it's a part of the evolutionary line of something that you've already got on your team or something that you've already fainted. So if you caught a Rattata, it evolved into a Raticate, and then you run into another Rattata, you don't have to catch the second Rattata either. You just disregard that. You disregard that encounter. It doesn't count as your first one, and so you go on and you get a second encounter, and that one counts as your first one unless it's another duplicate. In order to prevent abuse of Dupe's Claws, we are limiting it to 5 encounters. So if you go into an area, you go through 5 whole encounters, and they're all things that you've already got, at that point, tough luck, you don't get one there.
Oof. Okay. That's fair enough.
You know, and that's a much bigger issue in these early games because it's the smaller Pokedex. Like, in later games, there'll be so many things around that it's almost never going to be an issue where you don't get an encounter at all unless you're just extraordinarily unlucky.
Yeah, you can see that happening with Rattatas, Pidgeys, Oddish.
I don't know. I feel like you, Jolly, would love a 6 stack of Caterpies. I feel like that would be
Butterfree team go. Team.
Butterfree team go.
Rohane, I like good bugs.
Aww.
Butterfree is amazing for when you get him, but he doesn't stack up later. Like, I'm sorry, no amount of love is going to make a Butterfree good.
I feel like there is someone out there who's going to be incredibly hurt by your statement.
Well, no, I take that back. There are legitimately solid Butterfree builds in later generations. There are other bugs that do the same thing better, but once Quiver Dance is added, all the Butterfree Pokemon get all the Butterfly Pokemon get a lot better once they can use Quiver Dance. But in Gen 1, Butterfree's only redeeming quality is being the very earliest thing that you can get that knows a psychic type move. Like, that's it.
Okay. Well, it's still useful because it's sleeping powder.
Yeah, there's that. And again, if I get one, I'm sure as shit gonna use it. But yeah, regardless.
You could be like Ash and, you know, send him to go off with a lady.
Yeah, go get you some, Butterfree.
That is like the funniest episode. Anyways, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're all good. But yeah, so Dupe's Claws, you do not have to capture something that you've already captured. In fact, we're playing in a way that we're prohibiting it. If you've already caught it, you don't get it. So you can't use that to get around, you know, oh man, my thing died. Oh, look, here's another one. Nope, you already caught it. That was your one. That's it. It does make the game a little easier. You're going to get better Pokemon this way, but it also makes it a lot more interesting. Nobody likes having a bunch of the same thing. So I feel like it's more interesting for us. It's more interesting for our audience. We're going to play with Dupe's Claws.
Okay.
And it's a very commonly accepted clause in the community. Like, this isn't something controversial. Most people who Nuzlocke play with Dupes. Shiny Claws is another very commonly accepted rule variant that we're going to be using. Not in the initial runs, of course, because there are no shinies in Red, Blue, and Yellow, but for every subsequent game. And Shiny Claws simply states that if you encounter an incredibly rare shiny Pokemon, you can capture it even if it's not your first encounter. Shinies are at a ridiculously low encounter rate. In the early games, it's something like 1 in 9,000. I want to say 8,096, but that number could be incorrect. But it's really, really high. So if you defeat those odds and you encounter a shiny, you can capture it. The one exception being the red Gyarados in the Lake of Rage in the Johto games, because it's static. Everyone encounters that, so no, it's not special. It's a static encounter.
Okay. I mean, our first set of games, we're not going to have to worry about shinies anyway, so.
I've never even seen a shiny in the wild, so.
Oh, man, they're neat. And they become a lot more common in later games. Like, in Gen 6, I'm wanting to say they doubled the encounter rate for shinies, and it shows. But Shiny Claws is another one of those rules that we are playing with the asterisk that we are not to abuse it. Particularly in later generations, there are mechanics that make it much, much easier to encounter a shiny, such as chain fishing and horde battles. Don't just sit there and do those things and go, oh, look, I got a shiny bonus encounter for me. No, don't. Again, if you encounter one through purely natural means, cool. Don't sit there and spam things that increase your catch rate trying to get a shiny. That's not fair.
Yeah. Okay. No being dicks.
Yep. Do not be a dick to your friends. Okay. Now, the last one, this is technically considered a clause. Like, it's listed as an official clause on, like, the Nuzlocke Wikia. But it's even vague on there because a bunch of people take a bunch of different rules that they use and call it the same thing, basically. And that's gift clause, which gift clause is just basically how are we going to handle gifts, which are Pokemon like that Eevee that we discussed earlier, Mess, that's given freely from an NPC. It's not a trade. They don't ask for anything in return. You don't have to battle it. They just give it to you. And then other things that would be considered gifts, even though you technically have to purchase them, would be like the Pokemon that you can purchase from the game corner, would be considered a gift.
I don't think like if you're purchasing, if you're so desperate that you are purchasing a Magikarp, that's not a gift. It's an exchange. You are giving money for this good. Asterisk.
We use good lightly.
Yeah.
you're correct. They're not giving it to you out of the goodness of their
hearts.
They're
scamming you.
We are considering it a gift in that, again, it's one that is given to you from an NPC. You do not have to battle it. You do not have to give one of your own Pokemon in exchange. That's the definition of a gift that we're using here. So as far as gift Pokemon in the context of Nuzlocke's, this is another one that's going to be very subject to our interpretation, which is why it's a clause. Some Nuzlockers treat gift Pokemon as a bonus. So just if it's given to you, score, you get it. Some only allow them if they're the valid first encounter. So if the very first Pokemon that you encounter in Celadon City is Bill giving you that Eevee, then that Eevee is your encounter. And some people just ban them, just outright say, no gifts. You have to encounter and capture every Pokemon you get. So those are all valid. And for the record, accepting gifts is valid. Like even the creator of the Nuzlocke comic, he accepts gift Pokemon. So we don't need to feel like we're cheesing the rules if we take them, because he does. But we don't have to take them either. So what are your guys' thoughts on gift Pokemon? Do you want to allow them? Do you want to allow them freely? Do you want to allow them only as your encounter?
Personally, I have a soft spot for Eevees, as does my wife. She and I both love Eevees, and it's one of the things that brings us together when it comes to Pokemon. So I would really like my free Eevee, Kay. Thank you.
So here's a thought. Because Eevee... Is Eevee the only gift Pokemon in Kanto? I think so.
No, there's also the Lapras and the Team Rocket hideout.
And the Magikarp.
The Magikarp that you can buy for PokéDollars. And then again, there's the game corner, the gambling place in the same town as Eevee, actually. And you can trade the gambling currency for a number of Pokemon as prizes, which includes some really, really nice things like Dratini and Scyther.
Okay, so that aside, for Eevee specifically, what do you guys think about having something set up where we can all accept Eevee, but the evolutions are a one per, so, like, Alex and I, or Ryan and I, sorry, friends, long time, can't both have a Jolteon, so it's a situation where we do it based off of points, since we're going to be scoring this, where, you know, the person in the lead gets to choose the first evolution on the Eevee. What do you guys think about that?
I think that's a good idea, and it will probably keep me from making an Eevee breeding program and being like, well, I have now all the different types of Eevees.
Well, you can't really do that in a Nuzlocke anyway, Rohan.
Yeah,
you can breed
true.
It once, potentially, in the area where the daycare is and treat that egg as your encounter there, but then you couldn't repeat it. So, but no, that's we can totally do the evolutions by draft. I have no problem with that. But as far as the greater concept of gift Pokemon, do we want to ban all the ones that aren't that Eevee? Do we want to allow them, but again, only as a valid first encounter? Or do we want to just say that they're bonus, they're free? If you want them, get them.
For the first run, probably bonus is fine. I have a strong suspicion that Rohan and I are going to get blown back a little bit running through this. So any help we could get would probably be nice.
You know, for the record, I wouldn't be so sure of that, guys. Like, again, I may have done a lot more of this than you, but I also tend to get extremely impatient. I lose at least one Pokemon every Nuzlocke I do just from grinding for EXP and being like, oh, I can take that, and then dying. So I know that both of you guys are substantially more patient than I am, and you're both like theory crafters in other games, and I think you're going to do a lot better than you're giving yourself credit for.
We will see, I guess.
You have a lot of faith in us. I hope our viewers also have as much faith in us.
But okay, that's fine. For red and blue, we can just allow gifts freely. There's not that many of them to begin with, so I'm okay with that. We'll revisit that with each game, and specifically, we're definitely going to have to review it before we get to X and Y, because they give a ludicrous amount of gift Pokemon. Ludicrous both in the number and in the quality. Like, they give some really, really good shit all over the place freely. So we're not taking all of that. That's just nutty. But yeah, no, we can... For the Kanto games, for Red, Blue, Yellow, we can allow gift Pokemon as freebies. That's fine.
Okay, then.
And yeah, the last thing that people do to really tweak the challenge of their runs is they restrict outside information. So they might say, okay, I'm going to do this run of these games, and I'm not going to look at any internet databases. I'm not going to look up movesets. I'm not going to look up evolution. I'm not going to look up encounter rates, nothing. I'm not going to look up what the gym leaders have, what their movesets are. We're not using that because, again... You guys are new to this. I don't want to rob resources from you. Personally, I'm going to try to avoid using those databases. I'm not going to deny it entirely. If there's something I really want to know, I'm going to look it up. But I'm not going to like sit there with the tab open all the time either, if that makes any sense. Particularly when it comes to enemy trainers and their rule sets. I'm kind of handicapping myself that way. I'm not going to look at what rule sets enemies are running. So that's one advantage that you guys particularly potentially have over me is that knowledge.
Okay. I mean, I'm, even though we're doing this Nuzlocke style, personally, I'm not going to go for the guides unless I like get really, really stuck. I want to try to enjoy these games like fresh.
What were the game guides that you'd always see come out for? The strategy guys that would come out for all the games. What were they called? The company that made those?
I mean, they were made by a couple of different companies, really.
I can't even remember to save the life of me.
But you know what I'm talking about, right, Ryan?
Yeah.
Like, one group that put out, like, a lot of them?
Yeah. I'm actually going to take the time to Google it. Talk about other stuff while I do that.
You totally go to the store and be like, yeah, I'm really jazzed. I'm going to buy this game. And, like, the guy at the counter would be like, so, you want to buy this book? I'll tell you everything about the game before you play it so you can enjoy it.
Was it Prima?
Wait, what?
Prima Guides?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Yep. I totally remember that. I used to... I actually bought the guides for... I think it was Gen 2 Pokemon, even though I never had the game. So, yeah.
That's all right. So yeah, that's a lot of the common alterations of the Nuzlocke rule set. And for the record, just for our listeners, we are aware that there are a lot of really cool community resources out there beyond what we've discussed here to make for really fun and memorable challenges. Things like fan games and fan alterations, ROM hacks of existing games. The randomizer tool is really, really cool. It can mix up the Pokemon, so it can mix up the random encounters, the starters, what Pokemon trainers have. So that can make for some really fun things. It can also even mix up like learn sets and typings, so that can be wild. You can kind of customize how crazy you want to make things. And we're also aware that there are other harder challenges built on the original Nuzlocke, such as the wedlock or the competitive cage lock, which is kind of similar to what we're doing, but different. These are all fantastic. Like, these are wonderful things. I'm really glad that they're out there in the community, and they can make for really fun, memorable playthroughs. We're definitely going to consider using them for future things, whether for runs to continue the podcast after our big challenge, or even for one-offs if we need a break at some point, for any reason, then we might do like a fun little one-off where we'll go, okay, well, let's do this ROM hack real quick. But for our primary challenge, for the world tour challenge that we're doing here, we're sticking to our competitive rule set on the original Nuzlocke challenge. So we're aware of those things. If there's a particularly cool and novel one that you want to bring to our attention, by all means, let us know. But don't get your feelings hurt when we don't immediately incorporate it in the show. This is the rule set that we're using, and we're going to adjust as needed between games. But we're not going to jump to something like Wedlock anytime soon. So for our challenge, we are, again, competing with our Nuzlocke runs, and we're doing it with points. So as opposed to something like a Cage Lock, which is very much about that particular game, we're going to be keeping running point totals across these games for the entire series. So we will keep track of who won that particular game, but we're also going to keep track of who's winning overall. So how we're going to do the points is they're going to be awarded for positive achievements, things like beating a gym, beating your rival, etc. And they'll be deducted for negative events such as the death of a Pokemon or even wiping out your run. We're going to progress by one gym every week, with the asterisk there being the Johto games. So Gold, Silver, Crystal, and then Heart Gold, Soul Silver. Those will be two gyms a week because they are monstrous, sprawling behemoths of games. And then we'll record a podcast after completing every gym. And during those gyms, or during those podcasts, excuse me, we're going to battle. Again, we're not battling on our actual hard game copies. Instead, we're going to be uploading our teams into the Pokemon Showdown Battle Simulator and battling there. And we'll be uploading those battle replays with the podcast as well, if you want to watch those. Those PvP battles are going to be probably the single largest chunk of points awarded. So that's going to be the biggest thing that's going to earn you points. It's going to be beating each other. At the end of every game cycle, the player with the lowest number of points on the board is going to suffer a punishment or a default. So please email us your ideas, guys. We've got a few squirreled away, but if you've got a really, really good idea for something funny or humiliating to put each other through, we totally want to hear about that. I had an idea for the punishment of the Red, Blue, Yellow series. Rohan, I know you were on board. Mess, I know you had some reservations. Have you come around, or do we need to find something else?
We'll talk about it after we get some suggestions from people, so we have a pool of things to look at.
Okay. So for now, we're not ready to announce the default of the Red, Blue, Yellow series, but we'll definitely we'll have that decided and announced. I'd say no later than the fourth gym, no later than halfway through the games. We'll let you know what the loser is going to have to do. If we wait much longer, then we're going to know who the loser is, and so they're going to be kind of trying to steer that conversation. At the end of the series, there is going to be a pretty huge default for the loser of the series as a whole. We're not going to spoil that just yet. I think that one actually bears a little more discussion in mind. Again, this is one where Mess is kind of being a little pansy and pussyfooting around, not wanting to commit to it. In fact, I believe, Mess, isn't what you said that you would only consider what I had in mind if this show blows up and is really, really big and successful? So for the record, if you want us to go crazy, if you want us to go balls to the wall, then by all means, support what we're doing here, like us on social media, follow us on Twitch, and let this guy know that this is big enough to merit what I've suggested to him.
Which is always dangerous.
We all work day jobs, so, you know, gotta function in the professional world. So, yeah, by all means, make this my job, and then it's a lot easier to discuss those somewhat crazy concepts.
All right, so yeah, we're gonna be putting each other through some ringers. We'll be selecting our, and I've already kind of touched on the fact that we want to keep our starters. That's important, and we want to have different starters. We're gonna be selecting our starters and our versions by draft. So each of us is gonna have one of the three starters. Each of us is gonna have one of the three game versions of the generations that have three versions. And we'll be drafting based on total points. So the person who won the last game, who won the last version, they get to choose their starter first, and then we'll descend in points for that game. And then the person who's winning the overall series, the overall challenge, they get to choose which version they play first. So that's a very strategic decision, gentlemen. The version of the game that you're playing determines what your encounter tables are. So if there's a specific Pokemon that you would really, really like to have on your team, be sure to look at what generation it actually appears in or which one it's more common in. Some of the ones that aren't necessarily exclusive are still considerably more common in one version over another. And if a player gets a game over, that is not necessarily the end of them for that game cycle. They can start over and catch up. But they have to catch up to the group before the next podcast recording, or they automatically lose their PvP battles for that recording. Now, if we're late in the game, we'll try to stretch that gap and give them a little bit more time to catch up. I do have some other cool ideas for one-off episodes of the podcast, so if we've got something like that sitting on the back burner, we'll pull that out and we'll release that to give them a chance to catch up to the rest of us. However, we're not going to delay releasing a podcast episode to allow for a contestant to catch up. So if myself or one of my co-hosts, if we're on gym number 8 and we wipe and we've got to catch up and we don't have something neat to put in that week's episode of the podcast, then it's just tough shit. We've just got to grind our butts off or just lose those points. And if you are catching up due to a whiteout, you do not accumulate points for repeating a positive achievement. So if you beat a gym leader that you already beat in your first playthrough, you don't get new points for beating him again, but you do continue to lose points if your Pokemon die. So it's something that can snowball very quickly if you're not careful. So be very, very careful, gentlemen. Now, as far as our points are concerned, positive events that I felt merited points included obviously beating a gym leader, which I assigned a tentative value of 20. We can adjust these values as needed as we go, but defeating a gym leader would earn you approximately 20 points. Defeating your rival in any given rival battle would net you 10 points. Defeating the evil team's boss. So anytime, for instance, in Red, Blue, Yellow, you fight Giovanni and you beat him, that's 40 points because he's the bad guy. He's the boss, not including when he's a gym leader. That situation's weird. But if you beat him as the boss of Team Rocket, you get 40 points for that. Defeating one of the Elite Four members is also 40 points. Defeating the Elite Four champion is 50. So that's a pretty huge chunk of points all in a row, but it's also a pretty huge gauntlet to get through. So I feel like that's merited. And then each PvP battle in each episode of the podcast is worth 50 points.
That's a lot of points.
Again, that's going to be the bulk of them. That's the meat of our points. So we're going to want to be prepared, and we're going to want to bring our A game for those.
Okay, you're on.
Mess, does that sound good to you, buddy?
Yeah, it's absolutely fine.
Okay, and then the only negative events that I felt merited loss of points were, again, if one of your Pokemon partners dies, that's a negative 10. And if you white out your run, that's a negative 50. So it completely negates one of your PvP battles. And again, that's something that can snowball very quickly if you don't catch up in time, or if you rush too much and you lose subsequent Pokemon. So be very, very careful, gentlemen. That's our rule set. That's our rule set in a pretty quick rundown. Does anybody have any questions about it?
No, I think that's really solid.
Yeah, that's definitely a solid rule set. I think we're going to have a lot of fun with this.
Okay, awesome. Well, then I'm glad that we all agree, and I'm glad that we can move forward with that. So for the record, we are going to do one additional episode of the podcast before we start recording, specifically on the next episode of Blastburn Radio. We are going to go over the Generation 1 games in detail, our history with them, our impressions of them in the past. We are going to go over some community suggestions and advice from you, the Pokemon community on the internet, specifically given to us by the great folks at the r/Pokemon and r/Nuzlocke subreddits. So be sure to check those places out if you don't already. It's great community resources for Pokemon fans. And we got some really good stuff from them. So we'll be going over some of that for our new Nuzlockers. we are going to be going over our specific handling of certain rules for the Generation 1 games, and we will be doing our drafts for our starters and our game versions. So that should be a really, really interesting episode. Please look forward to that. So that was our show today. As always, ladies and gentlemen out there on the internet, we want your emails. Whether you're playing along with us at home, or whether you're doing your own various challenge runs and you just want to talk about them, or if you just want to give us your thoughts on our show, please send us those emails at blastburnradio@gmail.com or tweet the show at blastburnradio. We want to hear from you. I do want to thank our hosts once again for joining us. Rohane, where can our listeners find you online?
So our listeners can find me three different methods. The first is going to be at twitch.tv/Rohane. I will have a set stream time. It is not currently established, but I don't just stream Pokemon. I also stream other video games, and I am generally terrible at them. The other location is at youtube.com/POSMgaming. And that is basically where I put VODs of me being terrible at video games. And finally, if you are really desperate to get in contact with me, you can always email me at posmgaming@gmail.com. Eventually I will get a Twitter. Today is not that day.
I feel like we're going to have that discussion every week.
Probably.
Sooner or later, we will drag Rohane kicking and streaming onto Twitter. So Mess Buddy, if any of our listeners want to get in contact with you, or if they want to check out the other projects that you're working on, where can they find you online?
So you can find me at MezzerEngine on Twitter, or at twitch.tv/MezzerEngine. My other projects, Mythic Portal Games, is at Mythic Portal Games on Twitter or Mythic Portal Games on Facebook.
Awesome. Wonderful. And once again, as always, I am your host, Jolly My Nature. If you want to get at me or just see what I'm doing, which isn't a whole lot other than this show currently, but I do have some projects coming down the pipeline. You can get at me a couple of different ways. I do stream at twitch.tv/Jolly By Nature. Or if you want to reach out to me directly and see what I'm up to, you can follow me or tweet at me on Twitter at TheJollyByNature without an E at the end, because character limits, or you can just follow the show at Blastburn Radio on Twitter or Facebook. So thank you everyone for joining us today. I do once again want to give a very special thank you, as always, to my co-hosts MezzerEngine and Rohane. For Blastburn Radio, I am Jolly By Nature. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.
Goodbye.
Thanks everyone.
Blastburn Radio is a production of Challenge Accepted Media. This episode was produced by Jolly By Nature, Rohane, and MezzerEngine. Pokemon and all related games and characters are the property and trademark of Nintendo, Game Freak, and the Pokemon Company. Opening music in today's episode includes Game On by Fishy. Check out this and other video game remixes at ocremix.org. Closing music in today's episode is Pokemon Gold and Silver ending theme arrangement by Zephyr Badge. Check out this and other tracks at soundcloud.com/Zephyr Badge. Blastburn Radio and its hosts are solely responsible for its content.